Guys, do you know what is happening this week?
What's happening this week, Kari?
What's happening?
Sunday the 14th of June, we're having another episode of Sci Guys Live.
Another one?
Woo! Another one.
Are we doing more of those?
We're doing more of those. It's a whole series. One every month.
It's not like we've invested hundreds of pounds on the infrastructure to make it work, James.
No, definitely not.
We definitely haven't. But if you if you want a chance to get involved with the show and see all the new segments, then be there at 2 p.m. on Sunday the 14th of June on our YouTube channel. Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jemp and Luke Cutford.
Hello!
Howdy. This week, we're talking about the cause of all the problems in the world.
The cause of all the problems
in the
world.
Are you talking about me?
Money. Is it money?
Money is, no, money's like the root of all problems, but I don't think it's the cause of all problems.
It's the root of all evil, isn't it?
It's the root of all evil. Yeah.
No. Love of money is the root of all evil.
Isn't that greed?
So love is the root of all evil. Thank you, Luke. But no, we're not talking about money this week. No, we're talking about 5G, the cause of all the problems in the world.
Oh, here we
because
go.
As you guys both know, it's both caused this.
I think you mean the cause of the coronavirus.
Oh, I don't think we can say that on
it's a fact. I bring the facts.
I genuinely don't think we can say that word on YouTube.
No, we had Alex Jones as a guest today.
No, so yeah, as you well know, the 5G has caused not only this current situation, it's also caused people to get sick and get cancer and a whole number of awful things, hasn't it?
That's not good.
Corey, you're the one who has to say these facts.
No,
I felt
it hasn't.
Very uncomfortable listening to you say that there. I was like, oh no.
No, that is what people have been saying, but that's not necessarily true. In fact, I'll go one further and say it's absolutely not true at all. And that's what we're talking about today. What are the real dangers of 5G?
None.
Well, you don't know that yet. You've not listened to the episode.
No, I haven't.
You've not. No.
Two quick downloads on Netflix. Can't handle.
Yeah, people are going to be so lazy. Sloth is going to go through the roof.
What if the signal is so powerful? It sends off some radio waves into space and some aliens pick it up.
And start watching Netflix.
And then start watching. Firstly, they start watching Netflix. And then they hit Riverdale so much that they come to Earth and kill us.
I think as we all do.
That is actually, that's almost a plot. A plot of a Futurama episode.
I think that sounds like a plot of like the two aliens in The Simpsons would be like, these puny earthlings on that terrible TV shows.
So 5G, you guys know what it is at all?
Yes, it is the new evolution of the internet via telecommunications over the wife, over the things. Oh man, I was going so well.
You were going so well, and then you stumbled, fell,
electromagnetic waves in the is it the 10 to 25 kilohertz band, something like that.
Why don't we go all the way back to the start and talk about
electric? A bit too advanced, right?
Talk about WAP. An edge.
EMS signaling, digital and analog. This is something I'd expect both of you guys to know a little bit of something about. You know what the EMS is? Electromagnetic spectrum?
Spectrum, yeah.
Everything's a spectrum.
I would have called it EMF, electromagnetic frequency, for some reason.
That's already a thing.
So you can, electromagnetic frequencies are, that's a thing. It's basically the same thing, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I know.
So, okay. So we basically, you guys know how signals are sent. They're sent using electromagnetic radiation, electromagnetic signals.
Let's assume that I don't.
You don't know that.
No. Let's assume that I don't.
Well, interestingly, I didn't realize, because I've grown up like generally quite a technical kid. I might not sound it sometimes when I'm going blah, blah, blah. But I've grown up generally quite a technical kid and play with computers a lot and understand quite a bit. My housemate Rachel was telling me the other day that they have no idea how Wi-Fi works. And to them, it's just magic. And I was like, what? And my fiance Rebecca does not have any idea how Wi-Fi works and was just like, yeah, it's just magic to me.
I mean, this is one of those things where the difference between technology and magic is whether you understand it or not, isn't it?
Yeah.
But my instinct is always, I don't understand something, my instinct is always to go and find out how it works. And it was a shock to me that not everybody's like that.
See, no. I agree. But Wi-Fi is one of those things that I always forget what Wi-Fi stands for. And then I look it up and I remember it for about 2 months. And then I forget again.
Wireless fidelity.
Fidelity. Yeah.
Fidelity. Yeah.
Fidelity. You'd think it'd be wireless, fireless, but it's actually not.
Wireless, fireless.
It is both wireless and fireless.
It comes from hi-fi, high fidelity sound. You know, like a hi-fi you have at home.
Yeah.
And then wireless fidelity. And fidelity means that the signal that's broadcast and the signal that is received are either the same or very, very similar.
Yes. This is all very cool. Good information. So I'm going to tell you guys about digital and analog signals. So analog signal varies in frequency and amplitude. We've spoken about electromagnetic waves and electromagnetic radiation on the podcast before, but just as a refresher, bear in mind, they're basically waves. It's very simple. They've got amplitude, which is how big they are. They've got frequency, which is how, I guess, thin or wide they are. Mm-hmm. They all travel at the speed of light in terms of electromagnetic waves. An analog signal varies in frequency and amplitude. So the width of each wave varies and the height of each wave varies. Mm-hmm. Whereas in digital signal, you've only got two values, 0 and 1, on or off.
Binary,
exactly. So the reason that digital is a lot better than analog is that with analog, obviously because you've got two variables, if there's a bit of noise, if something gets a little bit lost, it's very difficult to tell what the original wave was supposed to be. Whereas with digital and analog, because it's only on and off, if you lose a little bit, you know whether it's probably on or off. If it's not zero, then it's probably a one.
Probably one.
Yeah.
So if you get interference and you receive like a 0.9 rather than one, you can make the assumption that it was probably a one and not a zero.
Yes, absolutely. So that's why digital signals are so much better than analog signals, which is why we switched to using digital signals for everything and analog's gone out.
And it also means, I believe, that like I don't know if encoding exists in analog signals, but with digital signals, it means you can encode data and then decode it on the other end. So you can send a lot more data than analog. Because in analog, for example, you have to send it literally how it is. Mm. Whereas with digital, you can encode it into a smaller format and then decode it on the other end and recreate what was sent.
Yeah, quite literally what I was about to say. Analog as...
Yes, he strikes again!
As Luke said, analog signal is literally the signal that is made. It gets sent, no processing whatsoever, and then you get it back and you turn it back into whatever it was before. So right. Say with sound, if it was a sound wave, it would look like the sound wave. That's what you're sending yeah. across. Whereas with digital, you convert that into ones and zeros, and obviously you can compress things with digital. You can just say, okay, well, instead of having all of these zeros, you can say there's 20 zeros. You know, it's the same as any kind of encoding. Mm-hmm. It makes it much easier to compress the data into a smaller signal. So, like I said, initially we used analog signal. So the first wireless phones in the 80s used analog signaling, and then 1G came around. Yes, the first generation.
Was it called 1G, or is this like when they called it the Great War, and then they reverse called it
World War One? Yeah, I'm not actually sure. I genuinely don't know. I just know that we call it 1G now. I think probably when 2G came around.
Does the G stand for generation?
Yes.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So yeah, in the early 80s, we had wireless phones, and then those were analog, and then digital devices kind of came around, and then we had the personal computer, the PC, which took off, which really jump-started wireless tech. So you got 2G networks, which rapidly started replacing the 1G networks. 1G networks being the analog technology, 2G networks being the first digital technology. And the great thing about digital as well is that you can send multiple signals at once, whereas analog, you can't do that. So digital, you can send multiple signals at once, and also you can send it at much lower power because you only need to say on or off. It only needs to be the difference between basically a 0 and a 1. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like again, like Luke said, you could get way more data across in digital as well. Digital really killed analog signal. I mean,
video killed the radio star.
Video did kill the radio star.
Digital killed the analog star. Hasn't got the same ring.
Doesn't
to
have
it.
The same ring at all.
1G killed the radiophone.
So 2G sort of transitioned into 3G, which was more wireless capability and better. So it basically, you were able to get more data into a packet, or able to transfer the packets more efficiently. Mm-hmm. So effectively, each generation, it's just a step up. The difference between 2G and 3G, I mean, it's not quite as clear cut as the differences between each subsequent generation. But yeah, so 2G launched commercially in about 1992, and then 3G moves in, and then 4G is where it really starts to get interesting. That's where phones became computers.
Beautiful. The transition from 3 to 4G, life-changing.
I remember when 4G started popping up.
Yeah, it's insane, right?
It's very confused.
That's brilliant. I mean, and if you think about it, your phone is effectively, what you've got right now, it's just is a computer, a very, very powerful computer. It can do so much. In fact, the difference between my phone and my iPad generally is just the size.
Well, they have the same processor.
Yeah.
The iPad processors are powered slightly higher and they have a slightly more fast graphics chip, but they are ultimately the same processor.
Yeah, which is insane.
Wow.
Deciding which one I'm using for any given task is based on how big do
how
I need
big the screen, how big do I need
well,
screen
to be. So I think that one of the transitions we'll see over the next few years is that, as for example, your watch, like my Apple Watch, for example, becomes like the power efficiency goes up and the battery capacity goes up. If we have a breakthrough in battery technology, for example, it's kind of stupid to have a processor in your phone and also in your iPad and also in your Mac and also in everything you have. It'll be much more efficient for you to have to spend a really good amount of money on a processor that's on your wrist that then carries all of your information, and then have a bunch of what are called dumb screens, which are screens that don't necessarily have processors included in them, and be able to have your, for example, your watch, although it may not be your watch, maybe it's your AR glasses, maybe whatever, wirelessly communicate with these screens that are essentially dumb, and the processing happens on one device, because it's such a waste of money you having a S10 processor or whatever it's called in your phone, and a processor in your iPad, and a processor in your MacBook. It's just, why are we doing this? It's very silly.
I can see Apple doing that, bringing out the new Apple Watch and the Apple screen or something. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And it's an iPhone that's been gutted.
I can see them doing one as big as a TV.
Yeah, I mean, they'll do it. They'll do it eventually. I mean, because if you think about it, Apple are still going to charge you a ridiculous amount for what is effectively a screen and a Chromecast.
Yeah.
Like, they don't care. They'll do whatever. Like I said, 3G rolls around, and then 4G comes in. And like I said, 4G turned smartphones into computers that could fit in your pocket, which is insane. Bear in mind, the first computers that were ever made were the size of rooms.
And they couldn't do much.
I'd love to do a calculation of what the size difference between an iPhone 11 and the equivalent processing power of an iPhone 11 in a Turing machine would be. I reckon like fields.
It's like football fields.
Large. It would be so big. It'd be so unwieldy. It wouldn't work.
And how big would the screen be at the same pixel density as what you could create there? Well, it would be CRT tubes, wouldn't it? So you'd have to...
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. That's ridiculous.
Or if you had to punch out all the information that can be displayed on an iPhone screen and onto punch cards, how much paper would you need?
That would be a brilliant video to... That's... Right, that
Tom
time.
Scott. There you go.
Don't give it to him. That's enough.
We'll do it.
That's enough.
Sorry, guys.
He'll do it next week.
Although check, because he's probably already done that, hasn't he?
To be fair, probably.
Yeah. That is a brilliant idea, though. Yeah, I mean, computing power has absolutely changed. I mean, the classic thing that you'd always hear in school is that the calculator that you've got in school is a more powerful computer than those that put man on the moon, which is pretty interesting.
To hear that, is that a universal thing?
Well. I mean,
in Australia as well. Well.
Yeah, it's the same calculators. Yeah, the same men on the moon.
I just thought it was like an urban myth, you know?
Well, I mean, if the Australian calculators were hundreds of years behind us. Australians don't have a calculator. They have a person called a computer.
They're always up
following them around doing maths for them.
They're actually always upside down, so they always say boobies. Always.
You have to flip it
upside down to get their actual number.
Yeah, so that's kind of a brief history on the generations up to 4G. Bearing in mind, 4G is when we managed to get sort of HD streaming, web browsing that is basically instant. All stuff we take for granted now. The fact that I can open up my phone and right now I'm on 4G, I could start streaming from Netflix in HD.
You can watch a 4K film.
Oh yeah, I can. I could 100%. Do it. You could do whatever you want. It's amazing. But now we're moving into 5G, which is incredible. Do you guys know maybe what the difference between 5G and 4G?
It's could very be? Fast.
It's faster?
Yes, it is faster. Do you know why?
It has shorter range.
It's
faster because the frequency of the data is higher. The frequency of the signal is higher. So there's more chances for zeros and ones.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually really similar to... So as I've said, with analog signal, frequency and amplitude varied. With digital signal, it's just amplitude. So that means that you can send different data at different frequencies. Mm-hmm. And obviously, the higher the frequency, the more waves you can fit into a certain amount of time, effectively. And it's actually the reason, an easy way to think about this, is the difference between DVDs and Blu-ray. So DVDs use red light, which is...
It's quite a long wavelength.
Yeah, a longer wavelength.
Yeah.
Whereas Blu-ray uses blue or violet light,
yeah,
which has got a much shorter wavelength, and so they can get more. They can get more data in there, which is why you can have sort of.
And that's why it's called HD Blu-ray. Blu-ray.
Yeah, that's why it's called Blu-ray.
Interesting.
Yeah. This is
so the data rate for 5G is like there's some places in America where it's hitting 300 megabytes per second. I think. I can't remember what the theoretical cap of it is, but it's like. It's a real contender to home broadband.
Yeah, absolutely.
The thing that's got people so shook about it is that because it's such a high frequency, it can't go around buildings very much. So you have to have the masts on lampposts.
So
like everywhere, all over your street.
So this is something to think about. So again, waves are actually they're fairly easy to think about. I mean, because they kind of act the same regardless of what they are. You can basically transfer an electromagnetic wave into being a wave in water, and it'll mostly act quite similarly. Mm-hmm. So if you think about it, a wave with a higher frequency is more likely to get blocked by something than a wave with a much lower frequency. So if you've got a lower frequency, you've got less waves per second. It can kind of bend around different objects.
Yeah.
Lower waves are just better at traveling. They don't sort of run out as quickly as higher frequency waves. Mm. But like Luke said, you've got higher frequency waves with 5G, which means, yeah, they've got a much shorter sort of range, which means you do need to have them, all of these sort of masts everywhere.
So that's a limitation of 5G. So one of my questions was going to be, could we just keep pushing this and go to 6G and then 7G? And then is there any natural...
I mean, there is
to it, but
there is probably
range.
An end. Yeah, I mean, there is probably an endpoint with the range. So 5G also uses three different bands, sort of three different spectrum bands to transfer data. So there's sort of lower one, a more medium one, and a higher one, and that means that it can kind of adapt to where and how the user is connecting. So it's much more intuitive. So the low band spectrum is what most carriers are already using, and it can actually. It can penetrate hard surfaces better and cover a broader area. The only issue with that is that it maxes at 100 megabytes per second.
Right. Okay.
So it's got a lot. Yeah, it doesn't give you as much data, but it can travel a bit faster. And then there's sort of there's a mid band and there's a higher band, which obviously gives you more data. Just to give you an idea of what this actually means. 5G could be up to 10 times faster than the previous generations. And that means that you can have an ultra high resolution, basically a 4K video call, which is ridiculous. 4K is the standard for digital movies right now. You can watch a 4K video on YouTube. Probably actually can't watch a 4K video on YouTube.
It's higher than the standard for digital movies. Like most movies are still mastered and broadcasted and projected at 2K.
Mm. You can, so yeah, I mean, you can watch movies in 4K, obviously. You can watch a YouTube video in 4K, although you probably can't because you probably don't necessarily have a screen that can...
I was going to say, you got to have a screen that accommodates 4K.
Yeah.
Firstly.
Yeah, which is a little bit more expensive than, you know, than a screen that doesn't.
Running the mill screen.
And a video call is one of the most data heavy things you can do. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, you're both streaming your video and taking incoming video that needs to be synced and also synced with the audio that's going out as well. It's a lot of work.
It is. It's a two-way live stream.
Yeah, it's a two-way live stream.
Think of it that way.
Exactly. A two-way live stream that also needs to be synced up to itself. And when it's 4K, that's an obscene amount of data. If you think about it, 4K is, what is it, four times as much?
As HD.
Yeah, it's four times as much as HD.
No, it's more than, is it not more than time?
No, it's,
oh, yeah, sorry,
it's four.
Sorry, yeah, you're right, yeah. 4,096 pixels wide.
Yes. Okay. So just to kind of give you guys an idea of, well, actually not you guys, to give the people listening an idea of what we mean by sort of HD and 4K. Do you guys know? I mean, I assume you guys know what the differences are. Do you want to explain them?
So
yes, go for it, James.
It's the amount of pixels you'll see in a frame. So with regular HD, we got standard HD, which is 720p, which is 720 pixels by 1280. Yeah, and then you've got
1080 by 1080. HD is 1080, right?
Yeah, which is 2 million pixels.
2 million pixels, which is 1080p, which is 1080 pixels by 1920. Mm-hmm. Okay, my numbers all jumbled up. Then 4K doubles that in both dimensions, so length and height, which means it's actually four times the size. So it's something like 3,860.
Yeah, there's several different 4Ks. There's UHD, Ultra HD, which is in the range of 3,800, 3,900, forget the exact. And then true 4K is 4,096.
That's it.
So these actually all come from the height apart from 4K. So 720 is 720 pixels tall, 1080 is 1,080 pixels tall, and 4K is actually to do with the width. So it's about 4,000 pixels wide.
Yeah.
Don't know why we changed it. We just decided.
Yeah, we just started because 4K sounds like a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it's marketing. It's literally all marketing.
Yeah,
from that point, it's marketing.
I mean, it's the same with DVD and Blu-ray. Like Blu-ray, just it's what it is, but it sounds really cool. So let's switch.
Other people
don't
know the difference between DVD and Blu-ray.
People don't,
but they just go Blu-ray's nicer.
When you have a 4K film, like you're saying, so like a video call probably be about 30 frames per second, and each frame of those will be 8 million pixels. So if you have 8 million pixels times by 30 frames per second, that means you are having 240 million pieces of, sorry, 240 million pixels. And each one of those pixels has quite a lot of bits of data to say how much each pixel is each color. It has a luminosity value, the brightness, and then it has a color value as well. So you can imagine just the ridiculous amount of data this becomes incredibly quickly. And that's why compression is really important, because you're not actually sending all those pixels over individually, because that would be ridiculous.
Oh, it's really interesting. Yeah. It might not be for streaming. I think it could be for streaming as well. There's this thing wherein it only sends what changes in the frame.
Yeah.
So it basically in a video, you can basically have it say, well, the background isn't changing.
Roughly the same.
It's roughly
between
the
frames.
Same between each frame. So let's just
copy paste it.
Let's just copy and paste it.
Yeah, essentially.
Which is why confetti. If you drop confetti in a video, the quality of the video just drops, regardless of what you're moving it on.
Compression even does that for stuff when you move the camera. Like, say you have a landscape, and it's compressed it as a still frame, and then you're staying there, and it basically doesn't send the image again because nothing's changing. If you move the camera along, it actually takes that compressed image and has a vector, which is like a movement, and it goes, that's moving this way. So it actually doesn't send it again. It just animates it. It's like you're watching an animated film.
It's brilliant, honestly.
So that might be why sometimes you get, if you have a really badly compressed movie, for example, if you download it illegally and it's like dreadful compression, or if you have like poor signal on an HDMI box or something like that, you might see when it changes from shot to shot, you see like some of the previous frame is left over and moves with the movement of the camera. Do you know what I mean? Have you seen that before? Have you experienced that? Where like
no,
a shot will change.
I don't download
and
my
the...
movies illegally, Luke.
No, I don't. All right, whatever.
Yes, yes, I've seen it before.
I know totally what you mean. But yeah, obviously with 5G, you'll be able to stream 4K video calls, which is insane. 5G can also have applications in healthcare, apparently. So if you're a healthcare provider, they can create sensor networks which can track patients and share information very, very quickly. You can also have an effect on infrastructure. Obviously, you can distribute goods and services around the world much better, more efficient travel, public safety. Basically, you could have super rapid response times from sort of emergency services.
Sounds like a lot of surveillance to me.
Well, that's the thing. There is obviously a massive degree of surveillance involved in this. But realistically, if you have an iPhone,
You're
being tracked anyway. Yeah. You're giving your data away basically for free. So yeah.
It does massively increase the accuracy of tracking that you're not consenting to, though, because whereas before, the way that you would be tracked by a phone network would be that they would triangulate the closest phone masts to you. And because those phone masts have quite a large range, you would only be able to be placed within a certain area. Well, now the phone masts are every street. And so they can track you to the street level and you don't even have to consent to it. So it is a risk because... You know, even if you have an iPhone or an Android, whatever, you are able to turn off certain tracking. Whereas now, if you are connected to a network, that's it. Cool. They know where you are. But like, whatever.
They track you down to the meter, can't they?
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever used Find My iPhone.
I have used Find My iPhone and it told me exactly where in someone's house it was. It was horrifying.
It's horrifying. One time my dad's phone was stolen and I used the Find My iPhone app to see where it had gone. And we could see on the map, someone had taken it like basically to a park. We could see the exact tree they were sat under.
That's a different technology though. Find My iPhone is GPS. It's not based on iPhone network.
I mean,
you consented to that as well when you set up Find My iPhone.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. If you've got location services turned on, you're basically already allowing, allowing that. Like they know where you are anyway. But with 5G, it's one of those things where as we progress technologically, we are just selling our privacy. If you think about it, if you look at us now compared to people 100 years ago, we have got far less privacy than people did back then to an unbelievable degree. If you were to tell someone from 100,
I don't think many people know that though. But at least to the extent
we don't think about it. It's not something we think about at all. I mean, every single message you've sent to someone, unless it's through some encrypted platform, can be found by people that want to find it. I mean, your location services, if you've got that turned on, you can be tracked basically within a few meters constantly. Every single thing you tweet or like or you follow on Facebook, that can all be built into this picture of who you are as a person.
Yeah.
It's horrifying how much data about ourselves we just kind of willingly give away.
And then it can be sold.
It's really funny as well because it creates these conspiracy theories where, for example, Google and Facebook and whatever are listening to me. And, you know, I understand why those sort of things crop up and understand that it's a real fear. But the reality of it is that probably, I mean, I don't know, I don't literally know, but Google and Facebook say they aren't listening to you. And the reality is actually much more terrifying than Google and Facebook listening to you, which is that they can build up a model of who you are and how your brain works just by the information you are giving them willingly, not anything to do with actually listening to
you.
Listening to you is like, that's very crude. They can tell who you are by how much time you spend looking at a photo and which type of photo you click on. And what type of advertising is good for getting you to click? Like, it's more scary than them listening to you.
This is why I get frustrated when I accidentally click on an ad, or I accidentally I'm across the room and I accidentally let a YouTube ad run. I'm like, oh no, I don't want you thinking that you can give this to me. I don't want it.
You should let loads of YouTube ads run that you're not interested in then.
Well, no, actually you shouldn't let YouTube ads run, because the more you click skip ad, YouTube basically gets that, oh, you're not gonna, if you constantly get unskippable if you constantly get unskippable video ads on YouTube, apparently closing the video and reopening it until the ad disappears, YouTube is less likely to show you unskippable ads because they know it's a waste of time.
Yeah.
But that's, so, that, then people like us don't make any money, Corey.
Yeah, I don't care.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Look, the alternative is ad block.
I make money from it, but I also hate advertising. And we do make money. We still would make money from it. You get a, if the ad opens and plays for a bit. Yeah, so like I said, public safety, and then autonomous vehicles. That's a really cool one. Because 5G is, you know, much more regular, it can let vehicles communicate with each other and also infrastructure, which means that you can have autonomous self-driving cars effectively in cities, which is brilliant. It's fantastic, and it can also be a lot safer.
We're essentially evolving towards a point where we have a system that does everything for us, and we don't really understand it anymore. It's a very strange, but we're the ones building it. It's magic. Fascinating.
It's magic, isn't it? I can't wait. It's very, very soon we're going to live in a society that is just magic, which is going to be lovely.
I don't understand it.
So, yeah, so 5G will get into higher frequencies, which is about, like Luke said, about 3.5 gigahertz up to a few tens of gigahertz. So 3.5 gigahertz to like 20, 30 gigahertz. Obviously, these higher frequencies are completely new to mobile phone networks. We've not been using frequencies as high as, say, I think about 20 odd gigahertz at all before for mobile phone networks. They are used in other things. So body scanners for security checks, they've been used in that. But obviously, at these higher frequencies, you need more base stations. And you need to focus the signals more efficiently because they don't travel nearly as far. But still, it's an amazing thing that we've developed, and it's potentially going to change the world in ways that are actually noticeable.
Yeah. No doubt.
Most phones aren't actually compatible with 5G yet, are they?
I don't think so, no.
No.
That'll be the next Apple event.
Oh, bloody hell. Here we go. So, why do people think that 5G is dangerous?
Because they don't understand it.
Yes, that's true.
Ooh, deep.
No, genuinely, that is true.
Yeah.
So, most people sharing these kind of posts are pushing a conspiracy theory that falsely claims that 5G, which is used in mobile phone networks, obviously, is responsible for the current situation.
The current pandemic going on right now.
Basically, all of these theories kind of claim that 5G can suppress the immune system, which makes people more susceptible to catching the virus. Other people say that you can transmit the virus through 5G. It's not a computer virus. Probably can't do that. Another one says that it's just flat out caused by it, attacking your cells and breaking them down and making them cause the virus, which are all things that we have no evidence to support. So they've kind of come entirely out of nowhere. So Dr. Simon Clark says that these notions are complete rubbish. He is an associate professor in cellular microbiology at the University of Reading. So he probably knows what he's on about. So another issue is these 5G masts catching fire and potentially causing cancer as well. So they caught fire in Birmingham and Merseyside, which people always start investigating. They started specifically investigating whether 5G can lower your immune system. And realistically, your immune system can be dipped by a lot of things, like being tired one day, not having a good diet. There's fluctuations all the time. Mm-hmm. Saying that 5G is the root cause of your immune system being lowered isn't necessarily the best way to look at that fact. Radio waves can heat you up slightly by less than 1 degree. So 5G can technically heat you up.
They give you the fever.
It's not. Mm-hmm. It heats your body up slightly higher, potentially. But because they're such short range waves, it just doesn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't have that much of an effect. Really, it's your eyes and your skin that you got to look at. That's what's going to be raised to less than a degree higher than normal. But your internal organs aren't really going to be penetrated by 5G, so it's really not something to worry about at all.
You should be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I say you should be fine.
Should be.
You'll be fine. Like, there's every chance that we can find out that 5G causes something in the future. Every chance. But right now, to the best of our knowledge, it doesn't actually, like, there's no links to it causing anything. it's just a higher frequency of radio wave. And we've used it in other things before. So we know the effects of radio waves on the human body. It's unlikely that this is going to cause any major catastrophe. So from the World Health Organization, to date, and after much research performed, no adverse health effect has been causally linked with exposure to wireless technologies. Health-related conclusions are drawn from the studies performed across the entire radio spectrum, but so far, only a few studies have been carried out at the frequencies to be used by 5G. As the frequency increases, there is less penetration into the body tissues, and absorption of the energy becomes more confined to the surface of the body, skin and eye. Provided the overall exposure remains below international guidelines, no consequences for public health are anticipated. So basically what that means is we've not done a lot of studies into those frequencies, but the ones we have done haven't shown anything
to worry about. Not done a lot of studies into the frequencies.
We've not done as many studies into those frequencies as we have done into other frequencies in the radio in that spectrum, because we've not been using them as much.
Yes.
So we have done studies.
We are using them a lot now.
Well, yes, but I mean, ultimately,
spending billions of pounds deploying them around the world to everyone's streets.
No, we've not done as many studies on the health effects of those frequencies, but long-term health studies are, it's kind of difficult to do that when you've not been, like, you've got no idea what range of frequencies you're going to be using. You can't, and it's a spectrum, so it's basically infinite. You can't just test every single frequency, and there is no chance that you're going to be able to hold back technology to say, hold on, let's wait 20 years to test this frequency before we start using it.
Yeah.
There isn't, because we live in a world where superpowers are competing for global domination, basically.
Well, yeah, I mean...
Yes. I think that's where a lot of the worry comes from, is that people feel this idea... I don't agree with them, but I think they feel the idea that that... what is more important is progress and domination than health. And that's not necessarily in the case of 5G, but it is to a certain extent the case of global capitalism for the last 100 years. We've sort of destroyed the atmosphere in most of our major cities in the selfish advancement of financial gain and power to different countries, right? And that create, when you do that for a sustained period of time, some people, especially the ones who got left behind by that global economic advancement, are going to crop up and be annoyed about that and then get very worried about their existence. I don't think they are correct in their worry, but they are correct in their worry in that they may have been left behind by the economy and the growth of the economy. And it's quite sad, really. I just think it's quite sad that people are scared enough that they become conspiracy theorists, and it's from a subconscious feeling of just fear. Like, they've just got a feeling of fear and a feeling of being left behind by the countries they live in, and though that fear rises up into their brains, and then they try and attribute the fear to something, and they go, well, what's changed? Okay, yeah. Well, we're in the EU. All right, maybe that's why. Or, well, they put these masks up on my house. Maybe that's why.
Do you think it's because people feel vulnerable, and so they're trying to find someone who's potentially victimizing them or taking advantage of them?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. They feel an innate sense of, I'm the victim of something, and then they go, well, what am I the victim of? What's changed?
Yeah. 5G.
Well, yeah, I don't think that's the reason, but you are a victim of something, potentially.
Fair enough. I mean... 5G has changed a lot. And it is a big world-changing thing. It's understandable to point to that. But I think with conspiracy theories, the issue with conspiracy theorists, and this is what you always find, is that when you can't trust anyone, anything can be true. You know?
Yes.
Yeah. Been
there.
Anything can be true.
If you say, oh, can't trust authority figures, okay, cool. Who can you trust? This guy. Memo. Why? Because he says the authority figures are bad. Okay.
Okay.
No other credentials?
No.
I guess.
You make that decision.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've covered conspiracy theories a lot on this podcast.
Quite a few episodes.
Yeah, and that is the unifying factor I can always find, that when people have decided that authority can't be trusted, they can put their trust in anyone they want.
They just put authority somewhere else under someone else who agrees.
Well, they just put their authority in whoever doesn't believe in the authority.
Exactly.
True.
And it's always it's always a whistleblower. It's always someone that's studied the stuff and has been sort of cast out or is a contrarian in their field. And it's interesting to think that everyone can think one thing, but this one person thinks something different. So I'm going to follow them because of that.
And so that somehow gives them credit.
And in fairness, in some cases, that is the thing to do. You know, following someone that goes against the grain is the thing to do. But when there's such little evidence, it's very interesting, to be honest.
Yeah, people want to be red-pilled, don't they? People want to understand the world.
Well, you say there's such little evidence. They are being presented with things which to them look like evidence, generally.
Yeah.
Being presented with either fake, like there's a big disinformation campaign in Russia, supposedly, where they make fake FBI files and disseminate them via local newspapers. Yeah, this is a whole thing. There was a secret police were given, I think 25% of their time was devoted to creating false information and forging documents in order to seed distrust in Western countries. And it's not like they're not being given what they think of as evidence. Mm. When you look at something that you think is evidence, you're trusting the source of that thing, right? You don't necessarily know. You've not replicated your study yourself. And they are receiving the same thing and they're scared. And I understand why they feel that way. And they are being given what they think of as evidence. Yeah. In the same way that you think of the things you think of as evidence.
It is an interesting point. A lot of this sort of evidence for these things, they build off of a sort of cursory knowledge of science. So people kind of understand how, say, germs work. They kind of understand how radiation works. So you say, oh, the radiation attacks your cells and that's what makes this virus.
Sounds like it could be legit.
Yeah, it sounds legit enough. I mean, I think the issue is that, yeah, when you make your point that you can't trust, you know, the main group the authority figures.
I didn't say you can't trust them.
No, I'm not. I'm saying when you make your
when you feel like you can't trust them.
Yeah, when you feel like you can't trust sort of the general consensus, then it's very difficult to argue against that. It's very difficult to know when you can and can't trust.
Well, the problem is that we in our society trust an awful lot of, like, we trust Edward Snowden, for example.
Mm.
And he's a whistleblower. And so, like, how do you make the distinction between who's a whistleblower you can trust and who's a whistleblower you can't trust? Like, at what point does that decision get made in you?
No, absolutely. It's something you genuinely have to play by ear, and it's so difficult to gauge, and you can never really know if you're right about it. That's what's difficult. But
yeah,
like this 5G thing, that's not to say that you should be worried about 5G. Realistically, I'm telling you the things that we've found that could potentially be dangerous. The slight increase in body temperature is really the only thing we found. Even cancer isn't likely to be increased by 5G because it's got such a short range. It doesn't penetrate much deeper than your skin and eyes to cause anything. So, you know, you shouldn't be too worried about that at all. The one thing you should be worried about, the actual problem with 5G, is it's potentially going to mess up weather forecasting.
Oh, what?
Yeah, have you guys heard about this at all?
No.
So,
something to do with satellites, maybe?
Well, kind of. So we can basically look a week in the future right now. We can tell what the weather's going to be about a week ahead. And to be quite specific about it, weatherologists, what they called meteorologists. Meteorologists use, detect a frequency in a very specific range that is that shows that there's water vapor, effectively. So 5G wants to use that same frequency, which obviously will cause sort of noise. It'll cause interference. You won't be able to tell, oh, are there 5G masts there? Or is there a particularly dense cloud of water vapor? It's obviously going to cause issues. So people that are sort of meteorologists, people that work in weather, studying weather, are not very happy about this at all. I mean, Tony McNally from the European Center for Medium Range Weather Forecasts also in Reading, said, the way 5G is being introduced could seriously compromise our ability to forecast major storms. In the end, it can make the difference between life and death. We're very concerned about this. Apparently, people that live on the coast can have two or three fewer days to prepare for a hurricane. Incorrect predictions of the path of the storm, it could lead to that. There's so many effects that it can have. It's because this very specific frequency, 23.8 gigahertz, water vapor emits a faint signal in the atmosphere at that frequency. And obviously, if 5G is going to be used at roughly that, if it's going to be used at that frequency, it's going to cause interference, which
it's
is
a
an
shame
issue.
There's no way for them to like turn it off for, say, half a second simultaneously across a given landmass. I mean, obviously, that would cause some problems with the things that 5G will be used, like cars, for example. But yeah, it's a shame that they can't like have a brief window of observing and then turn it all back on.
Well, the thing is that they need to be monitoring it pretty much all the time. The thing about that is, though, that it's interesting you say that, oh, well, 5G needs to use that range. 5G doesn't need to use that range at all. Water vapor emits a frequency, emits at that frequency. But 5G can be used at kind of any frequency.
Yeah.
And this is actually pointing out an issue that we've got in society where, because frequency is, amplitude varies in digital signals, and a frequency, kind of what frequency you're sending it at, is the difference between which signal you're sending and receiving. Frequencies are being used up. Like, we're running out of frequencies that we can use for certain things, you know?
There's only so many, I guess.
Yeah, if you think about it, like radio. So in radio...
at least ones we can access. Because it's technically gone forever.
But. It could technically go on forever, but then that would be getting out of sort of radio wave spectrum or moving into different spectra. But the thing with... If you think about radio, you've got each station is a different frequency, isn't it?
Yeah.
What happens...
You tune in your radio to the right frequency and you get that station.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's a finite number of stations you can have because there are...
Yeah.
There's basically kind of finite number of frequencies between each one, unless you can get more and more granular. But even then, that's not really going to work. So we're running out of space, and that's the issue with 5G. They're trying to take up the space that meteorologists have been using to study the weather.
But now with digital signals, we've got internet stations. We've got infinite radio stations on the internet.
That's true, yeah, we do. Infinite
potentially.
Radio.
Well, there's only so many people.
Yeah, well,
so,
but what, 7 billion stations?
If everyone has one, yeah.
If everyone gets their own radio
station.
No
one listens to any of them.
Everyone listens to themselves.
That's just a podcast. So the SEC, which is the federal, the Federal Communications Committee?
The FCC.
The FCC, yes, in America. Now, they are planning to use other bands of frequencies for 5G, other bands which are also going to cause problems. They're ones that are near other frequencies that are used to detect different sorts of precipitation. So, for example, rain and snow is at the 36 to 37 gigahertz sort of range. Atmospheric temperature is 50.2 to 50.4 gigahertz, and clouds and ice is 80 to 90 gigahertz. Those are the ranges of frequencies that we use to detect those sort of patterns of weather, and the FCC is planning to auction off those radio frequencies for 5G, not necessarily those specific ones, but bands near those. So even if we manage to stop sort of the companies from using that specific band that's used for water vapor, we're still not necessarily safe.
So the clouds could tune into the radio eventually. It'd be nice, wouldn't it?
I mean, Nick.
Yeah, James, that's it.
What it means. But there are some, it's not all negative, there are some potential benefits to this. The Met Office, which is the UK's National Weather Service, that has got they've got the view of, basically, if there's limits on 5G that are set in Egypt, it can actually be really good, because rain makes the air more dense. So when it rains, the air becomes more dense, and that means that you've got dips in 5G signal. So you can effectively detect rain by detecting a drop in 5G signal, which is really interesting. So you've got a lot of detailed information about sort of the gaps in the 5G coverage, basically due to rain. And that's a new way of observing rainfall purely just through using a detector, 5G, and the fact that it can't travel as well through rain. So
could it theoretically be worse in winter when we're using our phones?
I mean, look, yeah, potentially. Because the air is more dense, your signal could get worse when it's raining. Potentially. Wow.
Potentially.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I mean, realistically, the ranges that you're using it at, it's probably not likely going to be affected because it's such a short range.
It's very specific. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, theoretically, that could happen.
Is it going to make another version of that thing that happened when the iPhone 4S came out, where the way you held the phone affected what signal you got? Because now it's even more.
I don't remember that.
Do you not remember that? So there's a big scandal when they released the iPhone 4S that you held it a certain way and you just got no signal at all. And Apple came out and they were like, "You're holding it the wrong way." And everyone was like, "Shut up, you're idiots."
what way did you have to hold it? What way was the right way and what was the wrong way?
They did a new piece of technology where they used the frame of, actually got a 4S right here, weirdly. They used the frame of the phone.
Where did you find that?
I've actually got two if you want two. Here they are.
Here's one I made technology.
Earlier. Why I actually have no idea desk? Why I have these two iPhone 4S's on my desk.
Ancient
right now.
Technology.
Or iPhone 4 or whatever it is. Well, they use the actual frame around the edge as an antenna, which is very clever.
Oh, I remember.
It meant
that
when you were holding it, you were covering the antenna. Yeah. Very silly. And so they came out and they gave everyone who bought one a free bumper case so that they weren't covering the antenna anymore.
How were you supposed to hold it then?
Well, just not like it was specifically like gripping it with all your fingers wrapped around and covering every bit of the antenna. And if you just held it like a normal phone like that with your finger on the back, it was kind of fine. But I wonder if because 5G is shorter range and more susceptible to things covering it and not being able to go round objects, will that make another antenna gate scandal of 2021?
Maybe. I mean, I think they probably thought that. I don't think Apple's going to make the same mistake twice.
No. That's true. That's very true. I hope not.
But with that,
time will tell.
It's the end of the episode. Is there anything else you guys want to say?
Bye.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
No. In all seriousness, I would really appreciate it if you could leave us a nice 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That would help us out a lot.
So don't forget, we have got a SciGuys Live on the 14th of June. Bear in mind, if you're not there live, you can watch it again on Patreon. Just join our Ig Nobels level and you can have every single SciGuys Live.
Patreon.com/SciGuys.
Thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday. And why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Or you can sign up to Patreon at patreon.com/SciGuys. Or send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com. I am not Corey everywhere.
I'm Jamkin everywhere.
I'm Luke Upwith everywhere. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Ow.